didn't want it to come to this,
Bale admitted. But he didn't relax his stance. When I'd been at Storvaten before, it had been hard for me to get a clear read on Bale. He'd been standoffish but professional when Casper and I interacted with him. We were never able to entirely discern what Bale's role was in everything that had transpired in Storvaten. But as the head guard, he definitely had his hands in things. It had been his guard, Cyrano, who attempted to murder King Mikko, and it had almost certainly been Bale who falsified the safe records that got Mikko arrested. From the best I could gather, he'd been working with Kennet from the start of the Fallen Prince's plan to dethrone Mikko. If it hadn't been for Bale, I wasn't sure how much Kennet would have been capable of on his own, but I doubt Mikko would have been arrested, which meant that Kennet wouldn't have come to Doldestam to pay Mina for her help, and then Casper wouldn't have been killed.
I worked my ass off for that kingdom, if you can even call it that, he said, his words dripping with venom. 4 years. All I wanted was to be paid my dues, and Kennet came up with his plan. And it would all be so simple.
It can still be simple, I said. Killing an innocent will only complicate things. Bale snorted.
Since Kennet turned against me and deposed me, I've been sentenced to doing Victor's dirty work. I'm up to my neck in blood. What's one more bitch?
Victor will turn on you too, Constantine warned him. The same way he's turned on me.
I'm not an idiot like you. I just want to get paid,
Bale sneered.
And right now, Victor is offering a massive reward for delivering the three of you.
He nodded toward Ridley, myself, and Constantine. Then he looked down at Tilda, almost speaking in her ear.
What's one more body to add to the pile? If you hurt her, you will not leave here alive, I growled at him. I will kill you with my bare fucking hands, Bale.
Bale started to laugh.
Oh, you really think so?
Something flashed in Tilda's eyes, and her body tensed up. Her expression hardened, and there was a resolve in her that I knew all too well from training with her. Tilda was a master of restraint, but she could destroy someone if she wanted to.
Wait, Tilda said in a stilted voice. This is Bale Lundin. Bale, who conspired with Kennet? Bale, who's one of the reasons my husband is dead?
I nodded once.
Yeah,
that's him. For the first time, Bale seemed to realize he might have bitten off more than he could chew, and he looked down at Tilda with new appreciation. Tilda may be pregnant, but she was still tall and strong, with muscular arms and powerful legs. I was sure that when Bale had first captured her, she'd been more docile so as not to risk him hurting the baby. But now she was pissed. With one sudden jerk, she flung her head backward, smashing into Bale's face. From where I stood several feet away from her, I heard the sound of his nose crunching. Before he could tilt the knife toward her, she grabbed his wrist, bent it backward, and, using her other arm as leverage, she broke his arm with a loud snap. It all happened within a few seconds, and Bale screamed in pain and stumbled back. His arm hung at a weird angle, and blood streamed down his face. But Tilda wasn't done yet. With a swipe of her leg, she kicked his legs out from under him. He fell back into the mud, and Tilda kicked him hard in the groin, causing Constantine to wince beside me. Then she jumped on top of him, punching him repeatedly in the face with both fists. His body had gone limp, but I wasn't sure if that was because he was unconscious or dead. Either way, Tilda apparently decided that she wanted to be certain. She grabbed the knife that he dropped on the ground beside them, and she stabbed him straight through the heart. And then she just sat there, kneeling on his dead body and breathing hard. None of us said anything or moved. It felt like she needed the moment to herself. When she finally stood up, she shook her arms out, probably both because her fists hurt from hitting Bale so hard, and also to get rid of some of the blood.
Do you feel better?
I asked her. She nodded, still catching her breath as she walked over to me.
Yeah. We have to do something about these bodies, though.
The humans will get suspicious. That girl is a fucking beast, Konstantin whispered as she walked by,
and he looked at her with newfound admiration. You should see her when she's not pregnant, I said. Tilda went into the SUV and used a bottle of water and a shirt from her bag to clean off the blood. Eventually, the rest of us would probably want to do the same, but right now we needed to focus on getting the bodies out of here before another car came by. While Ridley and I went to grab Bale's body, Tilda moved all our bags into the back seat so we wouldn't bloody all our things. Konstantin grabbed Drake's body, throwing it over his shoulder, and then dropping him unceremoniously in the back. The challenge was not only moving Monet's massive body, which took all three of us, but also loading it into the back of the SUV. We had to fold him into a very strange position to get him to fit.
There's still one big problem, Tilda said.
While we stood at the back of the vehicle, beside the open tailgate, she was still sitting in the back seat and turned to look at us over the pile of bodies.
These guys were clearly Victor's men, and they found us.
How? Ridley shook his head.
When we left Oldestam, we threw out our phones, and we ditched the Range Rover and rented a car. I don't know how they could possibly track us.
Then he looked over at Konstantin.
Unless someone told him where we'd be. They tried to kill me too, remember?
Konstantin snapped.
And how would I know that we'd be at this exact spot, on this exact shitty road at this time, while Tilda was taking a piss? Then how did they find us?
Ridley asked defensively.
Probably the same way I found Bryn.
He turned back to the bodies and pushed Monet out of the way so he could dig in Drake's pocket. Then he pulled out a lock of dark curly hair and held it up to Ridley.
He was tracking you.
Ridley's face fell, and he ran a hand through his hair, as if he'd be able to feel a missing lock of hair.
Shit. Shit indeed.
Konstantin gave him a hard look, then he slammed the hatch back shut. He walked around the car and got inside, leaving Ridley and me alone.
I'm sorry,
Ridley said, staring off at the empty field beside us.
I shouldn't have come. Mina knew I would lead her right to you. It's my fault.
She tricked you, I said. She's tricked all of us. It's what she's good at. He set his jaw.
I should have known better.
It's okay. We're all okay. You're the one that got hurt the worst. His skin had been red and raw, but it was starting to darken as bruises began to form. He just shook his head.
You guys need to leave me here and go on without me. They could have more people tracking me. You won't be safe with me.
Ridley, I'm not going to leave you on the side of the road. And even if they do track us, they'd follow us straight to Storvatten, where they plan on attacking anyway. We'll be fine. He lowered his eyes, swallowing hard.
I'm sorry, Bryn. I shouldn't have come. I just...
You just what? I stepped closer to him, and he lifted his eyes to meet mine.
I just had to see you. I needed to know that you were all right.
I wanted to ask, then why are you pushing me away? If you just wanted to be with me, why are you being so distant? But I didn't think he would answer, so I just looked up at him, wishing I understood the pain in his eyes. A car door opened and Konstantin leaned out.
We should probably leave before backup gets here.
Chapter 43. Crusade. This was the first time Tilda had been to Storvatten, and her eyes widened as she took in the palace. With luminous walls tinged in aqua, curving to mimic waves, it rose from the still waters of the great lake like an enchanted sapphire. Thick fog had left the palace hidden from the shore, since it sat several miles out in the water. Ridley, Konstantin, Tilda, and I walked almost halfway out on the dock that connected the palace to the land before it started to take shape, a shadow looming behind the gray. And then there it was, in all its glory. Tilda, who wasn't easily impressed, actually gasped when she saw it. While I still found it magnificent, all the events of the past few weeks seemed to have left me somewhat numb to its magic. As we approached the large wooden doors of the palace, they opened before we'd even reached them. The entrance glowed pale white as we walked toward it, and an imposing man stepped forward, reminding me of an alien overlord descending from the mothership. He was tall and broad-shouldered, especially for a Skoyara. They tended to be more petite in frame, Mikko and Kennet Bielsa aside. His blonde hair was cropped short, and he was clean-shaven. The uniform he wore was that of the Skoyara guard, a frosty blue, embellished with the insignia of a fish on his lapel. Even without the uniform, there was something very military about him. He stood at attention, with his head high and his blue eyes locked on us.
"I'm Beltzar Thorne."
He greeted us formally but politely. He bowed his head slightly, and I noticed the thick black outline of a fish tattooed on the back of his neck.
"I'm the new head guard for the Skoyara."
Already he looked like a vast improvement from their last head guard, and I'd only just met him.
"It's really you,"
Linnea squealed, and I heard her voice echoing through the main hall before I saw her. She dashed across the glass floor, her blue gown billowing around her, and she practically dove at me, hugging me. When she let go, she stepped back to appraise me. Smiling broadly, she said,
"It's really you. The gods at the shack at the end of the dock called up and said you were coming, but I didn't believe them."
"Your Highness,"
Beltzar said, carefully trying to wedge himself between us.
"She has been accused of killing our prince. It seems prudent to..."
"Oh, she didn't do it,"
Linnea waved him off. Then she took my hand.
"Let's go inside and get out of the cult, so we can talk. And you bring your friends."
It was the first time she'd stopped to look at who was with me. But as soon as she saw Constantine, her jaw dropped and her already large eyes widened.
"It's you,"
she gasped and let go of my hand.
"You saved my life."
Constantine lowered his eyes and shifted his weight from one foot to the other, already uncomfortable with her praise. Then she ran over to him and threw her arms around his waist, embracing him tightly. For his part, Constantine stood frozen in place with his eyes nervously flitting around. His arms were stiff at his sides, like he was afraid to even touch her.
"My queen, it's not advised to hug guests before we have a chance to vet them,"
Beltzar tried unsuccessfully to reason with her. Incensed, she stepped away from Constantine and glared at the guard.
"This man saved my life. He's a hero. He doesn't need to be vetted. They're all guests of the kingdom, and they're all welcome inside."
Beltzar sighed, apparently realizing the futility of arguing with her.
"If it's as you wish, Your Majesty."
"Come in. Come in, everyone."
Linnea motioned for us to follow her as she walked inside the palace, her platinum curls bobbing as she walked. Her dress was cut very low in the back, to just above her waist, and it compensated for that by having a long satin train that flowed out behind her. Beltzar bowed slightly again and gestured for us to enter, so I smiled politely and followed Linnea inside.
"Just to let you know, there's a couple bodies in the back of the SUV you probably want to take care of,"
Ridley told Beltzar as he walked by.
"We already killed them for you, so it shouldn't be that much of a problem,"
Constantine added.
"Pardon?"
Beltzar asked, looking startled.
"Who did you kill?"
"Don't worry,"
Constantine said over his shoulder as we entered the grand main hall.
"They were Victor Doleg's men."
When Beltzar still appeared puzzled, Constantine elaborated.
"The men that declared war on you."
Linnea had been walking ahead, intent on showing us all in and seeming to ignore the exchange between Constantine, Ridley, and Beltzar. But as soon as the word war was uttered, she'd stopped cold. In the rotunda, sand-blasted glass shaped like waves surrounded us, opaque, with a hint of light turquoise showing through. Below us, the floors were glass, windows to the pool. Chandeliers sparkled with diamonds and sapphires, casting light all around us. It gave the effect of standing in a whirlpool, and right now Linnea was in the dead center of it.
Well, the canon actually declared war,
Ridley said, correcting Constantine in a conversational tone.
If you want to get technical. He seems like the kind of guy who'd want to get technical.
Constantine pointed toward Baltzar.
That's true, Ridley agreed. But either way, Victor Doleg's men will attack the Skoyara. They're probably helping the canon, so it's all the same difference.
Yeah.
Constantine looked over at Baltzar.
The point is that we helped you by killing those men.
Linnea still had her back to us, and she turned around slowly to face everyone. All the lightness and playfulness that usually enveloped her had fallen away. Her skin had paled even more than normal, and the translucent gills on her neck weren't moving.
Did you say war?
Linnea asked in a voice so soft I wasn't sure that Ridley or Constantine had heard her from where they stood several feet back. Tilda and I were right behind Linnea, and even I barely heard it.
Didn't you?
Ridley glanced over to me, looking for help, but I had none to give.
Didn't you get the proclamation from the canon?
Linnea shook her head once.
No. We've received no correspondence from the canon since they told us of Kennant's death.
I saw it yesterday,
Ridley motioned to me.
We both did. At the Trill Palace, Queen Mina sent the scroll to the Trill Queen declaring war on the Skoyara.
That's why we came here, I explained. We wanted to see if you needed help preparing for it.
Of course we need help,
Linnea replied emptily. And then she looked past me at Baltzar.
Our worst fears have come true. They're going to kill us all.
Chapter 44. Defensive. Marxina Lisbeth Alstrom, the acting ruler of the Skoyara, and Linnea's grandmother, stood with her back toward the meeting room as she stared out at the dark water that surrounded us. Her golden hair was up, and her sapphire chandelier earrings hung past the high collar of her jacket. Wave-like designs were embroidered in the cerulean fabric, and the hem of her jacket just hit the floor. We were in the meeting room underwater, where half of the room stuck out from the palace with a domed wall of glass, creating a fishbowl effect. The last time I had been here, King Miko had been arrested, and now we were discussing war. Baltzar, Ridley, Constantine, and I sat at the end of the very long table. Linnea had been too shell-shocked to be of much assistance, and Tilda had feigned needing to help her to keep her preoccupied. For the past hour, we'd been in the meeting room, explaining to Lisbeth and Baltzar everything we knew. While we spoke, Lisbeth had paced the room, listening to us tell them about Mina's relation to Victor, her involvement in Kennet's scheme, and her plot to steal the jewels now that Kennet and Bale were out of the picture. When we'd finished, she stopped and stared out at the lake. Night had fallen upon us, making the water too dark to see anything, but Lisbeth kept staring out, as if an answer to all their problems would come swimming up to the glass.
After he was killed, I realized that Kennet had to be involved in Miko's imprisonment somehow,
Lisbeth said finally.
I wore black for 3 days, until Kennet's funeral, as is customary, but I haven't worn it since. I mourned publicly because I had to, but I won't shed a tear for anyone that tries to hurt my granddaughter.
Then she turned to face us. In her 60s, she'd begun to show the signs of her advancing years, but she still carried the grace and beauty of her youth. She commanded the room like a queen, even though she'd never really been one.
What would you have us do?
Lisbeth asked.
How do we stop this?
Constantine sat with his elbows on the table and his hands together in front of his face, almost like he was praying, except that his hands were clenched too tightly.
You can't stop this. Once Mina has her mind set, there's nothing you can do to talk her out of it.
What if we offered her our jewels?
Lisbeth suggested, almost pleading.
We have so many. We must be able to spare a great deal.
She wants them all.
Konstantin lowered his hands.
And even that won't be enough. Since she's had to wait for them, she's annoyed. And she'll want you to suffer for that.
Lisbeth rubbed her temple.
Then what do we do?
I've been working as the Irvishter for the cannon, Ridley said. And Tilda's been acting captain. We can work with your soldiers and get them ready. We know exactly how the cannon fight and what they're skilled at.
Lisbeth laughed darkly.
You say that as if we have soldiers.
If Mina hasn't declared war yet, that means you might have some time, I said. Time to gather people and get them ready.
Unless, of course, she's planning a surprise attack.
Konstantin corrected me, and I shot him a look.
Well, it's true. You have one huge advantage. And that's this palace.
Ridley motioned around us.
It's an island fortress. And we have the spires,
Baltzar said, referring to the 5 towers that rose from the palace.
I've been doing bow training with the guards, so they can man them and shoot at possible intruders. It's not a lost cause, Ridley said, trying to sound optimistic.
There's something else I think you should do, I said. You should release Mikko.
Talk to that one, Lisbeth pointed at Baltzar. I want to let him go. I've known he was innocent for a while, but it's Baltzar and the Chancellor and some of the other royals that don't want him out.
Baltzar shook his head.
It's not that I don't want him released. There's not enough evidence to set him free. I was a Marquis and I stepped down. I gave up my title and my inheritance because it was more important to me that Storvaten be kept safe. I took this job to make sure it was done right.
You're going to war. You need him, I persisted.
I'm the acting monarch. I have all the same power he has, Lisbeth said.
But you're not king, I told her emphatically. Linnea may be queen, but she's not strong enough yet to lead anyone into war. Mikko has power and presence. And he has a brother he needs to avenge. If it wasn't for Mina, I don't think Kennet would have ever done any of this. Mikko needs to be on the forefront, fighting for your kingdom. Lisbeth seemed to consider this. Then she looked past me to Baltzar.
Do it. Let him go.
Marcusina,
Baltzar protested.
I'm trying to bring order to this kingdom.
And there won't be a kingdom to bring order to if we don't do everything we need to,
Lisbeth shot back.
Let Mikko go. He needs to be the one to end this.
Chapter 45. Valedictory. May 25th, 2014. Dear Bryn, everyone's gone and left, and it's lonely without you all. Not that I blame Tilda and Ridley for getting out of here, especially not after what happened to Ridley. But with all of you gone again, the isolation feels so much more intense. Thankfully, Delilah is still here. She has become my rock, my light, my only salvation in this claustrophobic cage. Last night, I snuck into her room, carefully and quietly so none of the guards keeping watch would catch me. We went under the covers in her bed, hiding away from everything around us, and by the dim glow of the flashlight, we read poems by Gustav Froding, Karen Boya, and Par Lagerkvist, and her Swedish is so beautiful to hear. Forgive me if I'm a little verbose today. I'm sorry for rambling on so much about Delilah. I could go on for pages and pages about the beauty of her eyes, and the scent of her hair, and the strength of her spirit, and the warmth of her arms, and the taste of her lips. But I'm not writing you to go on about her forever, though I could. It's just the only time I feel even close to free anymore is when I'm with her. It's so contradictory that life can be the worst it's ever been, and the best it's ever been all at once. It's strange how love can blossom even in the darkest places. And it certainly is dark here in Doldestam. And not just because you and Tilda are gone. I know I could have gone with Ridley the way Tilda did. And maybe I should have. My mom would have preferred it if I had. 4 years ago, we left Fjerning to escape all the turmoil there. We chose Doldestam because my mom's sister lived here with her husband, and it seemed like a quiet, safe place to live. My mom is starting to believe that there isn't a quiet, safe place in the entire Troll Kingdom. And at night, when she thinks I can't hear, she whispers to my dad about fleeing to live among the humans. I wonder how you're finding Fjerning. It's been so long since I've been there. Are you sleeping in my old room? Finn says he hasn't repainted my room yet, so I hope you're enjoying the blotchy clouds I painted years ago. Maybe I should have left with Delilah. Gone back to my old room. Gotten away from here. I'd certainly love to see Finn and Mia and the kids. But I couldn't go. Not just because of Delilah, or even Linus Burling. I've been training with him as often as I can. And while he tries harder than anyone I've ever met, I still feel like he can't protect himself. And I know there's other people like him here. For every Astrid Ekwell, who is a star pupil under the Queen's new paranoia campaign, there is a Linus Burling. And for every town person that screams about stringing up traitors like you, there is a Junie Scold, disobeying the wishes of the town by still serving your parents in her bakery. They have unfortunately been blacklisted for most of the shops here. There are still good people here, and they need someone like me to help them when it comes time to fight. I don't know when that will happen, but I feel like it's gotta happen soon. I don't know how much more we can take of this. Every day things get worse. Yesterday, Umta guards started appearing around town. You know how huge the Umta can get? All of them are over 6 foot, some over 7, with big heads and muscles bulging out everywhere. Apparently, where they're from is incredibly warm, and they're having a hard time handling the cold, so they're all bulked in winter jackets and hats and scarves, even though it reached the 40s. Even with their ridiculous gear, it doesn't make them any less intimidating. They stomp around the cobblestones like they own the damn place. I've actually seen children cry at the sight of them. Queen Mina held another meeting in the town square after they'd arrived. She stood on the balcony of the clock tower, still wearing all black, including this odd birdcage veil over her eyes. The Umta had arrived unannounced. By the time she called the meeting, everyone was on edge and scared. In her grandiose way, with lots of arm gestures and her fake British accent that annoys you so much, Mina explained that the Umta had come here to help protect us. We have so many enemies, we needed a stronger guard. Though she didn't specify who any of these enemies were, and she hasn't mentioned the name Victor Doleg in quite some time. Apparently he's no longer a threat. Just you and Constantin Black. And now the Skoyara, apparently. But I'm getting ahead of myself. She assured everyone that the Umta are here for our protection. Your mom and dad were at the back of the crowd, and I saw the nervous glances they exchanged with each other. I wanted to look as uncomfortable as they did, but since I'm part of the army, I had to put on my best smile and pretend like I thought this was totally brilliant and not complete insanity. When the king died, Mina wouldn't even allow cannons from other towns to come and mourn him. But now she'll open the gates to complete strangers from another tribe? A tribe we've had very little contact with over the past century? Obviously something bad is going on, but I haven't been able to figure out what yet. It's hard when there's so few people I can talk to about this anymore. If I'm being honest, part of the reason I'm writing you this letter is just so I can sort it all out for myself. In your absence, you've become my sounding board. After explaining the presence of the Umta, Queen Mina went on to announce that she discovered the culprit behind King Everett's murder. Kennet Bielsa. When the crowd cheered, I actually cheered along with them, because I thought, finally, you'd be cleared. But no. She actually raised the accusations, claiming that you were a co-conspirator with Kennet. You actually helped him with the poison, or some nonsense like that. Then she concluded that the Skoyara could no longer be trusted. You'd betrayed us because of your Skoyara blood, and all Skoyara are inherently evil. It was at that point that your parents quickly and quietly made their exit. Unfortunately, they don't live that far from the town square, so I'm sure they could still hear all the vile things Mina was saying about the Skoyara. Later, after everything had died down, I brought a casserole over to them. My mom had made it for them with root vegetables, since she knows that the market has been refusing service to them. Your parents have mostly been subsisting on treats from Junie's bakery and the kindness of strangers. Your mom was in the bath when I arrived, and your dad answered the door. He says that your mom spends most of the time soaking now. His temples looked grayer than they were the last time I saw him, but otherwise he looked okay. He says he's just been reading and trying to keep his head down. They rarely leave the house, and they keep their thick drapes pulled at all hours since they caught some kids trying to peek in a few days ago. When your mom came out of the bath, she hugged me and told me how happy she was to see me. I told them that you're safe, hiding in Fjerning, and she started to cry. Your dad teared up too, and he spent the next 5 minutes thanking me for helping you. I don't think I've ever seen two people look as relieved as they did then. They'll need to escape soon, but with the Umta guard around now, it will be even harder than before. Fortunately, the Queen doesn't seem to have noticed that Tilda has escaped yet. Tilda's parents are covering for her, saying she's on bed rest with the baby, anytime anybody asks about her. I think her parents and I are the only ones that really know where she is. As soon as I see a break in the defenses, I think I'll get my parents and your parents out of here. It's getting too dangerous. The Queen already turned on the Skoyara. It won't be much longer before she singles my family out for being Trill. We've always had the advantage of blending in better than you and your mom did, but nobody really blends in Doldestam anymore. Everyone is suspect. I shouldn't even be writing these letters to you. If the wrong person reads this, I could end up in the dungeon just for telling the truth about what's going on around here. To be safe, I'm even writing this in the wee hours of the morning before the sun comes up, but you can never be too safe in Doldestam anymore. I think this will be the last letter I write you. I have too much to do here. I can't risk getting caught over something silly like this. Besides, I'm not even sure if you'll ever be able to read these. Until I see you again, Ember. Chapter 46. Torment. The meeting with Lisbeth, Belsar, Konstantin, Ridley, and I had gone on rather late into the night, and I'd been very relieved when I was finally able to go to my room. I had fantasies about falling asleep the second my head hit the pillow. But even as exhausted as I was, sleep could be a cruel mistress, and it eluded me. I tossed and turned, and spent most of the night staring up at the water spot on the ceiling above my bed. The grandeur of the exterior of the Skoyara Palace was misleading. Even though the guest rooms had an air of luxury to them, fine linens, elegant furnishings, even the exterior glass wall that bowed out in the lake, the reality inside was quite different. A bedroom underwater was cold and smelled musty. The wallpaper in the halls was peeling, the tiles were warped, and I spotted a tuft of mold growing in the corner. The dark water of the lake kept out most of the sunlight during the day, but somehow, even with the waning moon in the night sky, it managed to create an odd glowing sensation in the room, like being in an aquarium with the shadows of the moving water dancing across the ceiling. Eventually, I decided that I couldn't be the only one having trouble sleeping. I slid out of bed, and the tiles felt like ice on my bare feet. Since I was still traveling with my thrift shop clothing, I didn't have much in the way of pajamas. I'd gone to bed in an oversized t-shirt with a kraken attacking a ship on it. The neck hole had been stretched out, so it kept slipping off my shoulder, exposing more of my skin to the cold. I stuck my head out into the hall, and when I saw no guards in the vicinity, I crept out. Tilda's room was directly on the other side of mine, but I figured that between the pregnancy and brutally attacking a guy today, she probably needed her rest. Instead, I made a beeline for Ridley's room farther down the hall. We'd hardly had a moment alone together since he'd arrived in Fjerning, and we needed to talk. There was something strange going on with him, and I had to find out what it was. Slowly, I opened the door and peered around it. Ridley's room was a mirror image of mine, with the glass wall casting that bluish glow through it. Even though it was dim, I could easily see that the bed was messy, like it had been slept in, but it was empty. I stepped further into the room, scanning for Ridley, when suddenly someone grabbed me and threw me roughly against the wall, slamming my back into it. Within a second of me entering his room, Ridley had jumped out from behind the door, thrown me into the wall, and pinned me there with his body and his hand around my throat. "Damn it, Bryn," he whispered when he realized it was me and let go. You scared the hell out of me. You're the one that attacked me, I said in a hushed voice.
Sorry.
He stepped back from me.
I heard someone sneaking around outside, and I thought it might be one of Victor's men tracking me or something. I'm just jumpy.
Victor's men usually sneak into your room wearing oversized t-shirts, I asked, attempting to lighten the mood.
I don't know how they'll come for me.
Ridley's voice was low and somber, and his expression was a dark mask, hiding his normally handsome, playful face. He stood shirtless across from me, wearing loose black pajama pants. They hung low on his waist, revealing the sharp ridges of muscles just above his hips and a thin trail of hair that started just above his pelvis and ran downward. Part of me was aware of how sexy Ridley looked and how badly I wanted to pull him close to me, but the other part was all too aware of the gulf between us and how it only seemed to grow wider and darker with each passing moment. I rubbed my neck where he'd grabbed me and looked away from him.
Did I hurt you?
He asked and moved closer to me. His hand was on my wrist, angling my arm back so he could get a better look at my throat, and his face tilted down, so close to mine as he studied me. I watched him, the way his hair fell over his forehead, his heavy lashes, his wonderful lips, the stubble on his cheek, as he touched me gingerly, and all I wanted was to be with him, to kiss him and feel him close to me again. Instead, I whispered, I'm fine. He lifted his eyes to meet mine.
You sure?
I nodded. And that was when I realized his neck had fully healed. The skin had been torn raw by the chain, and he'd been left with awful thick bruises. But now it all looked normal. Your neck is better, I said in surprise.
Lisbeth had a healer fix it up. She wants me in top condition for the impending war.
He hadn't moved back from me, and his hand lingered on my wrist. His fingers were strong and warm on my skin, and I loved the way it felt when he touched me. A heat burned in the pit of my stomach, a longing so intense it made my heart ache. Being so close to him, being able to touch him, but not really hold him close to me, was killing me. I looked down, really looking at him up close for the first time, and I noticed ridges on his chest and arms. They were perfectly straight raised bumps, half an inch thick and several inches long. Without thinking, I reached out to touch one, and Ridley flinched and pulled back from me. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you. He turned his back to me and shook his head.
It didn't hurt. When the healer fixed my neck, she healed those up too.
What are they? What happened?
I just don't want to talk about it.
Ridley? I moved closer to him. I lifted my hand, meaning to put it on his back, but I was afraid he'd flinch again, so I let it fall to my side. Please stop shutting me out. What happened in Doldestam after I left? He looked at me over his shoulder.
Can you pretend like nothing happened in Doldestam? Can we just forget about it, at least for tonight?
If that's what you want.
I do.
Ridley turned to face me and held out his hand to me. I hesitated for a moment, but then I took it and let him pull me into his arms. For a moment, when I lay my head against his bare chest, with his arms strong and sure around me, I closed my eyes and tried to pretend that it was the way things were before. But there was a stiffness in his muscles, a resistance that hadn't been there before. Even though you're right here, in my arms, you still feel so far away, I murmured, and saying it aloud hurt so much I could barely speak. I can't do this.
What?
Ridley asked, sounding startled as I pulled away from him and stepped back. I can't do this. I want to be with you, but only if you're actually here with me. I don't know what's going on with you or with us. I swallowed hard. I can't keep doing this if you won't let me in. He lowered his eyes and didn't say anything. I waited, hoping that he would finally say something real to me. But he didn't. So I turned and started walking away.
Mina captured me as soon as I came back in the gates,
Ridley said when I reached the door, his voice strong but flat.
The guards hauled me off in front of everyone with my arms in shackles.
I faced him with my hands still on the door. His mouth twisted up as he spoke, and he kept his eyes locked on the floor.
She tied me to a rack,
he said thickly.
That's a medieval torture device. They tie you up by each one of your limbs, and then they pull. Slowly, agonizingly slow.
He motioned to his arms.
But that wasn't enough. Mina burned me, holding hot pokers to my flesh.
That explained the ridges on his arms, the ones I'd touched earlier.
The worst part about it all, he said, shaking his head. She never asked me anything. I wouldn't have told her, but she didn't even ask. She wasn't torturing me to find anything out. She was doing it because she could.
Ridley, I breathed. I went over to him and reached out to touch his face. He leaned into my palm and closed his eyes.
I'm so sorry. No, Bryn, don't be sorry.
He put his hand over mine.
Don't ever be sorry. Not about this.
I don't know what else to say.
You don't need to say anything.
He lowered his hand, then stepped back away from me, so I let my arm drop to my side.
It's late, and we have a long day tomorrow. You should probably head back to your room and get some sleep.
Startled by the abruptness, I didn't say anything at first. Then I nodded slowly and turned to leave Ridley standing alone in his room, wondering if I had failed him so much that we would never be able to reconcile again. Chapter 47. Offense.
That's not good enough,
Tilda barked, standing over a sweaty Skoyara guard. I'd been sparring with a different guard, but I stopped what I was doing to look over at her. For training today, she'd done her best to look every bit the part of a captain. Her hair was pulled back in a smooth ponytail, and she'd even gotten her hands on a frosty blue Skoyara uniform. It fit her well, except that the jacket had to be left open to compensate for her growing belly. Baltzar had set us up in the ballroom of the palace, since it had the most space. It was an opulent round room with white marble floors. Above us, the ceiling was domed glass, making this one of the few places I'd seen in the Storvaten Palace that let in natural light. The wallpaper had this magical quality, with a pale bluish sheen and a silver design etched into it. But when you looked at it, it seemed to move, like waves on the water. It was unlike anything I'd ever seen before. Every 20 feet or so, the wallpaper was broken up with a marble half-pillar. Baltzar and Ridley had organized the training today, separating the guards into groups based on their experience. Since taking his position a few weeks ago, Baltzar had already begun to rework the guard and hired 30 new recruits. On top of that, with the threat of war, many commoners and even a few of the royals had volunteered to join the makeshift army being built. Tilda had been tasked with commanding the group of new recruits and volunteers, and she was running them through their paces like a drill sergeant. When they'd first been assigned to her, I'd heard the recruits snickering about how easy they'd gotten it because she was pregnant and a girl. None of them were snickering now. At the back of the room, Baltzar was commanding his troop, while Tilda focused on more basic endurance and strength training, just trying to get them into proper physical condition. Baltzar was working on sword skills, while Ridley focused on hand-to-hand fighting. For the most part, Konstantin and I just floated around, sparring with people and helping to show them proper form as needed. Right now, Konstantin was standing with Ridley, discussing what to work on next, while Ridley's group ran laps around the ballroom. Ridley had asked for Konstantin's opinion on several things today in regard to training, And that made sense, since Konstantin had a lot of experience as a tracker, a guard, and practical application in real life. Since Furening, the two had seemed to get along well, and Ridley appeared to trust Konstantin's judgment. I'd had no input on what was happening today. Konstantin, Ridley, and Tilda actually all outranked me, discounting the fact that Konstantin and I had been exiled, of course. But that meant that while Ridley, Tilda, and Baltzar had to dress in uniforms like commanding officers, and the four of them had to worry and decide what everyone needed to focus on, I just got to get down and dirty. I was in my tank top and yoga pants, sweating and fighting with whomever I could, and honestly, it felt amazing. In the chaos of everything around me, training in the gym was the one area I could always count on. This was the first time in a long time I'd had a chance to really work off all the aggression I had about feeling so powerless against Mina and Victor Dolek. So today, as I punched another one of Tilda's recruits in the jaw, I couldn't help but smile. It felt great to be back.
"Brynn!" Tilda shouted. "You're not supposed to be making contact, remember? This is just training. You don't want to break all the soldiers before they go to battle."
"Right. Sorry. I got a little overzealous." I waved at her, but by the look in her eyes, I knew that wasn't good enough. She walked over to me, the trainees parting around her.
"That's the fourth time I've called you out on it. We've been going at this all day. Why don't you take five?"
"No, I'm good. I don't need it."
"Brynn?"
She looked at me severely, and I realized it wasn't a suggestion.
"Take a break."
"Fine," I said, because there was no point in arguing with her. I apologized to the guy I'd hit. Then I turned and walked away. I tried not to storm off, despite my irritation, but both Konstantin and Ridley turned to look back at me, their eyes questioning. I just forced a smile and hurried on my way. At the end of the ballroom were two large doors, and I pushed them both with my hands as hard as I could, blowing off a bit of steam. They flew open, and I heard a deep voice rumble in pain. As the door swung closed, I looked over to see that I had hit someone with the door. He straightened up, looking down at me with dazzling blue eyes, the thin gills under his jawline flaring when he exhaled. The chandelier directly above us was out, and his broad shoulders cast an ominous shadow over me from the light at the end of the hall. It was the newly reappointed king, Mikko Bielsa. This was the first time I'd seen him since I'd been implicated in his younger brother's death, and he did not look happy to see me. Chapter 48. Confrontation.
"Brynn Aven,"
Mikko said in a voice that rumbled like thunder. Linnea had once told me that Mikko was painfully shy, and I found that so strange. With his striking good looks, rather imposing size, and a voice like Odin, I'd never met anybody else who had a presence like his. He looked like he'd been created to be king. I swallowed hard before replying with, "Your Highness," and bowing.
"There's no need for that."
He looked uncomfortable for a moment, then folded his arms over his chest.
"I heard that I have to thank you for my freedom."
That was more Marxina Lisbeth," I stammered in surprise. His words sounded kind, but he looked like he wouldn't mind snacking on my bones for breakfast.
"She said that you swayed Baltzar into action," he said. "While I was incarcerated, Linnea told me that you never stopped believing in me and fighting for my innocence. She insisted that you were our greatest ally."
I didn't know how to reply to that. It was an exaggeration, but there was some truth to it. So I said simply, "I just did what I thought was right, sire."
"It's unfortunate how rare it is to find someone who will do what's right."
He turned his attention toward the ballroom doors. A sliver of bright light spilled through the thin gap between the doors into the darkness of the hall, making a line across Mikko's face as he peered inside. Even out in the hall, Tilda could easily be heard shouting her commands. The king had apparently come to watch his new army training, and with his attention back on that and off me, now would be a perfect time for me to slip away. I could go down the hall, get a drink of water, and cool off. But I hesitated, and it caused him to look back at me.
Is there something I can do for you, Grin?
I wanted to say that I'm sorry about your brother, I said finally. He sighed heavily.
So am I.
His normally hard expression softened, disillusionment and sadness wearing down on his features.
And I'm sorry that you got pulled into that mess. Linnea filled me in on what happened, and I appreciate you acting as honorably as you did.
Thank you, I said, stunned to hear Mikko actually thanking me for my involvement in his brother's death.
I do wish that Kenneth had been able to come to me with his concerns, instead of taking matters into his own hands.
He turned his eyes to the ceiling, and his exasperation gave way to anger.
But that's my father's doing. He always said that a real man would take what he wanted. Kenneth was kinder than that. Or at least he would have been, without father's influence.
From what I understood, Mikko and Kenneth's father, the late King Rune, was not a good man. My mom had bordered on calling him a sadist. He had hoarded sapphires and let the palace and the kingdom fall into disrepair. He'd been more focused on maintaining his wealth than the welfare of anyone, including his own children. Even after his father's death, Mikko had seemed afraid to undo his proclamations. The continuing policies of Rune had led to an inept guard and rifts in the kingdom. It was also one of the motivations for Kennet's attempt at overthrowing Mikko. Despite everything Kennet did, I do believe that he loved you, I said. Mikko lowered his eyes.
I know he did. That's what makes it harder.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you.
No. In an awful way, this has all been good for me.
He looked up at me, making eye contact for one of the first times since I'd met him.
I've realized that I need to step out of my father's shadow and lead in my own right.
Queen Linnea has talked about the greatness she sees in you, I said. They need a strong leader, and I think you're the one to do it.
The Skoyara are good people, and they deserve a strong king.
Mikko stood up straighter.
I must become that king for them.
I smiled. I'm looking forward to seeing you in action.
You can stay for as long as you want, he said. I know things with your kingdom have become a terrible mess, but I want you to know that you are always welcome here. As far as I'm concerned, you have a home here in Storvaten.
A footman came running around the corner, going so fast he skidded on the floor. He caught himself, then raced toward us. As soon as he saw the king, he started yelling,
Sire! Sire! What?
Mikko turned back to face him.
What's the matter?
The footman reached us, gasping for breath.
They sent me to get you.
He paused, gulping down air.
There's an army waiting at the door for you.
Chapter 49. Unannounced. Mikko was about to go to the door by himself, but I ran back into the ballroom and grabbed Baltzar and Ridley. I wasn't about to let the king get himself killed when the Skoyara had just gotten him back. Constantin and Tilda stayed back with the troops, preparing to command them if they needed to. The hope was that since the army had come to the door, they wanted to have some kind of sit-down with Mikko. Maybe he'd even be able to sway them away from the battle and come to some sort of compromise. That seemed unlikely, but at this point it appeared to be our only hope to avoid massive bloodshed. Before I left, following Ridley and Baltzar behind the king, Constantin grabbed my arm.
Do not leave the king alone with her,
he warned in a low voice, referring to Mina.
She'll kill him the second she has the chance.
I won't. I started to turn away, but Constantin still hung on to my arm, so I looked back at him.
"Be careful,"
he said, and finally released me. I ran out after the king. He, Ridley, and Baltzar were walking quickly and purposefully toward the front door. Baltzar was talking to Mikko, telling him everything that he should do and say, and what response he advised based on what the leader of the army might say to him. "What should we do?" I asked Ridley in a hushed voice as I fell in step beside him.
"Try not to let the king get killed, and try not to get killed ourselves."
He glanced down at me.
"That's the best I've got."
We reached the front hall, and I was doing my best to slow the racing of my heart. 7 guards, veteran ones who had been working around the palace and not training, stood at attention around the hall. Their hands were on their swords, ready to act if they needed to. If Mina and Victor had sent their full army, it didn't matter if the entire Skoyara force were in the hall. They weren't ready, and they'd be slaughtered. Ridley and I flanked the king on either side, while Baltzar went to open the large front door. Mikko stood tall with his head high, and it was definitely a good choice to release him from the dungeon. He was far more intimidating than Marcusine Elizabeth. Baltzar looked back at us, making sure we were ready, and the king nodded. So Baltzar opened the door. Standing right outside on the dock was a small hobgoblin, maybe 3 feet tall. In some ways, hobgoblins were like miniature ogres, except they were far more symmetrical in appearance. His features were humanoid, but his skin appeared slimy, with thick grayish-brown hair sticking up wildly on his head. Like ogres, hobgoblins were insanely strong. I'd met hobgoblins before, and I realized that I'd actually met this one in particular. He was Ludlow Svartalf, the right-hand man of Sarah Elsing, the queen of the Vitra. He'd accompanied her on trips to the palace in Doldestan before. Just to the right, and slightly behind him, stood Finn Holmes, offering us an uneasy smile. Standing behind both Finn and Ludlow were rows of troops, lined up down the dock. Most of them wore the dark emerald uniforms of the Trill, but a fair amount had the deep burgundy uniforms of the Vitra, worn by both hobgoblin and troll alike.
"Queen Wendy Staud of the Trill heard about the plight of Skoyara, and after considering it, she decided to send half of her army to aid you in your fight against the cannon,"
Finn explained.
"In addition, Queen Wendy and King Loki persuaded Queen Sarah Elsing of the Vitra to join in the fight,"
Ludlow added in his low, craggy voice.
"Queen Sarah has sent a third of her army to join your fight."
Mikko appeared too stunned to speak for a moment, but finally he managed to say,
"I am forever grateful for your offers, but I am not sure that I can ever repay your kingdoms. We are not in a position to indebt ourselves so greatly to such powerful kingdoms." "We are not asking for anything in return," Finn told him. "We are simply here to help you as you may need us."
"We are here to serve, King Mikko,"
Ludlow said, and he bowed before him. Finn followed suit, as did the troops on the dock, all of them bowing before the Skoyara King. Chapter 50 Masquerade.
"We need to celebrate," Linnea declared. "We're not all going to die, and if that doesn't call for a celebration, then I don't know what does."
It was hard to argue with that logic, so I didn't even try, and neither did Mikko. Since the Trill and the Vitra had pledged their allegiance and a chunk of their soldiers to us yesterday, we had spent the entire time trying to combine our armies. It required more effort because each of the tribes had such different strengths. Many of the Trill had powers of psychokinesis, meaning they could move things with their minds or even start fires. Since the soldiers present were all lower-ranking trackers and civilians, and stronger abilities went along with the more powerful bloodlines of the royals, they weren't very powerful, but they did have some psychokinesis. The Vitra were physically stronger than almost any other tribe, possibly barring the Umta. Despite their smaller stature, hobgoblins were easily as strong as ogres, if not stronger. And while Vitra trolls were generally more attractive and smarter than the Umta, they could be just as quick-tempered and aggressive. The Skoyara could breathe underwater, which wasn't very useful for this fight. They were also the least skilled in combat, and the other two tribes were often frustrated by their inability to properly defend themselves.